right, we're now at 5 o'clock, yeah. So I'll go ahead and call the November 7th City Council pre-council meeting to order. And our first item up is the American Rescue Plan Act presentation. Staff.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So we were here in July, and we talked about our survey and then our plan for focus groups. We've since completed those focus groups, so this report hopefully wraps that up and gives voice to our community. So I will go over the survey results and the focus group results, and then Jordan is going to go over the conclusions, and then I will talk just briefly about next steps. So this is the survey results. You saw this chart probably in our last report, but you also have a bigger chart on page 16 of the report that you can see that also added a few other filtered groups. So you'll see in when all surveys are considered, premium pay is number 3. We did not define premium pay during the survey. It was just listed as a priority, but we know that some folks were advocating the survey specifically for premium pay, and we don't know if they provided their own definition. When we were in the focus groups that discussed premium pay, Jordan and I tried to define it as extra wages for frontline workers, and we used examples like firefighters, police, grocery store workers, nurses. So we tried to give them multiple examples of what premium pay could look like. And then you can see on page 16 of the report that most groups didn't put premium pay in their top 5 of the survey. Yes.
How did we get to premium pay being 3rd then?
So, I'm sorry, when filtered, it was folks who, it was folks overall, and then let me get to page 16. I apologize. I should have had that ready.
Folks overall, both survey and
This I'm just talking survey so far. So when we filtered it out for business owners, work in Columbia, but don't live in Columbia, live in Columbia but may not work in Columbia, Black Indigenous folks, and low income folks, and then all participants is not filtered at all. So you'll see that the folks that voted it in the top 5 were all participants, and then of those, folks that work in Columbia but do not live in Columbia.
And I believe there were 39 people who, one of your numbers said, people who work in Columbia but don't live in Columbia, and there were 39 of them on one of your pages. Maybe that was in a survey. That's how I got stuck on. How did
believe there was
jump up to the 30?
Yeah, more than 39.
Yes,
we can get you that number, but it was more than 39.
I'll find the page. I printed out the pages I thought were interesting.
Perfect.
Okay.
So we already presented the survey results, so we were going to go through that pretty quick. So the focus groups that we did, you have a full graph on page 20 of the report, and it has all of these icons. It looks a little like this. And so these themes are what rose to the top, and they're just totals of this graph that you have here. So the top 3, the full report is on page 20. This slide is just the totals. We also wanted to give a little definition here for access to services in the focus group that could have included hours of operation, transportation barriers, supply shortages, lack of information on services, including a language barrier, and not enough assistance even before the pandemic. Workforce development included low pay, inability to hire, having to hire at a higher wage when seasoned employees barely make that much, and then remote work and hybrid models. Financial strain was, folks talked about the benefits cliff, can't pay bills and can't afford their basic needs, and we put that all under financial strain. Mental health and physical health we thought were pretty straightforward. We didn't get any questions about those in the focus groups about what those were. Like, people understood that mental health and physical health and what they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now moving on into our conclusions. So these are broken down by our key findings and then related ARPA priorities. So our first key finding is mental health and health access, with the related ARPA priority being behavioral health care, such as mental health treatment, substance abuse treatment, and other behavioral services. So the rationale for this being a key finding is that mental health and health access were number one in both the survey and a number one topic discussed in the focus groups. So some of the sentiments around mental health and health access were that it can be very expensive. There's also a lack of access due not only to cost, but availability. There was talk of mental health issues within staff and the workforce. I think we all experienced our own mental health issues during these times, but the morale in general was relatively low, often due to mental health issues. And then also not having access to community. Columbia is a pretty tight-knit community, and people really felt the toll of being isolated during this time. And then they also brought up youth mental health and kind of that struggle with the transition to online learning was a big, big topic, especially among our youth group. And then also just a need for more community health workers and outreach, especially during COVID when people weren't necessarily able to get out and about as much. And then I am going to go ahead and read this quote here. So we have, quote, "But I think the biggest thing for all of us was staying secluded. You think, oh, I'll just lounge around and watch TV. I have my family, but even that was hard. We did Zoom church, but not being able to go into the church building and participate in fellowship was hard. We used to have a lot of functions, and the functions stopped. All of that was really hard for me."
Oops, so sorry.
No, you're good. That was me. Okay, moving on to our next key finding, we have affordable housing and financial strain, with the related ARPA priority being assistance to households. So the rationale for this being a key finding is that affordable housing was number two for all survey participants, and financial strain related to meeting household needs was frequently mentioned in the focus groups. So I wanted to go over a little bit of why we combined affordable housing and financial strain. And this is because when we discussed financial strain in the focus groups, many brought up issues related to housing and utilities and meeting those basic household needs. So some sentiments around affordable housing were that people were struggling with utility assistance, the fact that a lot of housing is catered to college kids, and that there was a need for more kind of family-friendly housing. Rent and mortgage, as we all know, are going up. And there are not necessarily enough places that take vouchers, so just the affordable housing stock is relatively low. And then as far as financial strain, people spoke a lot about the benefits cliff, where they would lose their assistance if they got a raise or a better paying job. And then specifically in our refugee group, they mentioned that they were only allowed some special assistance for about 3 to 6 months, and that really wasn't enough time for them to adapt to potentially an entirely new culture, as well as maybe having to learn the language and kind of adjust that way. And then, of course, just there being wait lists for assistance in general. So I'm going to go ahead and read this quote as well. So we have, quote, "For housing, we need more homes with wraparound services. That's the expensive part. Investments that leverage other dollars so it's stable beyond relief funding. Investments that impact as many people as possible." Okay, our third key finding is workforce, wages, and retention. And the related ARPA priority is responding to negative economic impacts and or premium pay. So kind of like Carrie mentioned before, premium pay ranked third for all participants. However, premium pay specifically was not a primary topic in the focus groups. It leaned a little bit more towards workforce development, things like wages and retention in general. So some of the sentiments around workforce development. So specifically with premium pay, focus group participants generally agreed that premium pay for frontline workers was acceptable, and they recognized the unique struggles that those individuals faced. However, for themselves and oftentimes for the people that they knew, it was often a matter of survival during the pandemic and not being able to meet those basic needs. So that ended up being the priority for them. And then I think it's also worth mentioning that when we filter for those who live within the city of Columbia, as Carrie mentioned earlier, premium pay was not in the top five, and that's for the survey. So then as far as the retention piece, a lot of people brought up just low wages and people who were hiring, we're just unable to give raises in many cases. For example, we had an individual who owned a daycare, and she was saying that, you know, she'd love to give her staff raises, but she would have to then pass along that cost to the customer, and then they might not be able to pay, and then they're struggling. So it was, kind of became a cyclical issue. And then also regarding retention, just the overall morale, oftentimes due to mental health, the workload also taking a toll on mental health, hours and competition from places as well. People are just losing staff. All right.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Pat has a question.
So it says premium pay was ranked third for all participants, but your chart shows me that there's two groups that didn't rank it at all. So how does that work?
Yes. So for all participants, that just includes everyone. So it's not filtered at all. And then in the ones that you have circled, the BIPOC and low income and those who live in Colombia but may or may not work in Colombia, that was filtered specifically for those groups. If that makes sense.
And then aren't they also participants?
So that's why the all participants box is premium pay is checked in that first box. The subsequent boxes are filtered.
Because they're different people than the all participants.
The subsets.
Okay, so I have a math problem here. If it wasn't a priority for two subgroups, how can it also be in the top five for everyone?
So
it's
those
on their top five.
Those subgroups don't include all of the participants.
There were maybe more participants that were not BIPOC. Or,
sure. So say you had 100 participants of everyone, and 10 of them were BIPOC, and 10 of them were in this column. Then that means you had 80 that said that, but that's not all your participants.
No, all the participants is 100.
Yeah.
All your participants is 100. And then there's subsets under that. So we've filtered all participants, and then just BIPOC and low income, we could put those together because they chose very similarly. Like they chose the
exact same
categories.
Okay, so that's a category. All right, now I get it.
Okay.
I still think that's a problem, but okay. Okay.
All right. Oh, and I think.
Is this the one you need?
Oh, I was going to read the quote.
Oh,
sorry.
Great.
Okay, so the quote for this is, quote, due to the language barrier in Hispanic communities, many times people are not aware of certain services. So it's
So sorry.
I got ahead of myself. Okay, so the quote for this page is, quote, we used to have a short-term staffing crisis where you'd be down a few people for a while, then you'd hire them back and you're good to go. Everything is calm. Nobody has to work overtime again. There's not been any calm period where people got to go back to just a minimal amount of hours. It just keeps going and going.
And that quote was actually from our frontline focus group.
Okay, so for the final key finding, we have access to services, supplies, and information, with the related ARPA priority being assistance to households. So the rationale for this is that assistance to households ranked first in the survey for low-income and BIPOC individuals. And in the focus group, access to services was the most common theme tied with mental health. So some of the sentiments regarding access to services, again, we had kind of mentioned earlier, but just wait times and also feeling a stigma associated with asking for help, especially regarding mental health. As far as supplies, there were food and supply shortages and also potentially not having access to technology when a lot of people had to make that shift to remote working or remote learning. And then as far as access to information, there was discussion about people just not really knowing where to go for information on resources available. And specifically in our refugee group and our Spanish-speaking group, they expressed a need for those same resource lists in Spanish. Okay, and the quote for this one is, due to the language barrier in Hispanic communities, many times people are not aware of certain services. So it's important to have Spanish outreach that informs the Hispanic community in Spanish too. Not only that there are programs to learn English, but also that there are programs in Spanish so that they're informed about all of these services.
Okay, so hopefully our next steps include Council selecting the priority areas for the second tranche based on community engagement. And then for step two, we would create a scope of service documents for the priority areas chosen And we would provide some training on Resource X before step three, which is the submittal of initial applications using Resource X. And then applications are scored, applicants are notified, and then that capacity building is available for those agencies that maybe haven't applied for a big grant like this before. And then before we move on to step four, we would do some APRICOT training. So the submittal of full proposals uses APRICOT. So Resource X is kind of our letter of intent database, and then APRICOT will be our full proposal database. So those applications would be scored, and then applicants would be notified, and then we would work with finance, and funded applications would become contracted agencies, and we would work with finance together to conduct contract monitoring, and likely steps 3 through 5 would happen more than once because funding would be need to be left for those organizations that have utilized the capacity building feature.
Are we on the same version of APRICOT as the rest of the community, or are there multiple versions at play?
So we'll be using APRICOT for funders, and the United Way and the city and the county all use it, but they all have different forms that it's customizable. And ours will be customized.
So, Carrie, we have 4 areas of focus for the first tranche that we're currently accepting proposals for those 2. I guess a clarifying question, a lot of the topics for your conclusions that have come out from the focus groups and the surveys, thankfully are related to the first ones that we have going out. So is our thought also that, and I guess it's up to kind of council as well, is that those might also carry forward, right, as being applicable for people to apply within? Or are you looking for us to designate, you know, 4, you know what I mean, like, is that kind of the intent for us to designate new ones? I mean, potentially new ones, but still allowing those.
We started the focus group conversations with what was already being prioritized. Mm-hmm. So they knew that part going in.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. As far as the other, I'm not sure. I should be the one to answer that.
Okay. Well, I think for me, I was just going to say one thing first. Council asked y'all to help us do extensive like community engagement, and the focus of especially doing the adding on additional focus groups, I think we all want to say thank you. Like, this is a lot of work and information that's gone forward, and I think it also feels good that councils, before some of us were even on council, y'all were thinking the right as far as the areas, since mental health, housing, workforce development were what were picked, and those are also what's coming out of some of these. So I think that shows that we were not totally off the bat on this. Nick, you wanted to...
Yeah, I have a question about step 2. And how that might work out in practice. And I'll give you an example. If we were to say that we want to address access to services, that's a pre-existing condition. That's been going on for a long time. And I suspect that probably it just comes in greater relief during the pandemic because of deep need. So if we wanted to address that and say, we want to figure out a way that we can make it easier for people to learn about where services are and how they access those, would you then try to define that more in the scope of services? Part of the reason I'm asking is because I'm wondering about the process of application, so that, you know, there'll be a letter of intent, as I understand it, first, and then a proposal. So there'll be some back and forth, I would assume, in that. So sometimes I wonder if some of those who might apply might have a really good idea about how to address an issue, like, let's say, access, that might not fall within the scope of services that you define or is different in some way. Is there going to be some flexibility about that, I guess?
So when we did the first 2, we tried to keep them broad.
Right.
We wanted to invite all great ideas. And I was envisioning that your direction for us that we would do the same thing,
yeah,
because I think that there's a lot of potential. The other thing that I would point out is thinking about it, is money doesn't go on forever. So when we fund programs and services, it's got to stop. So the think about the sustainability.
Exactly. That, I mean, that really is what I have in mind here. So that, that if the ARPA money could be directed in such a way that we address this pre-existing condition, as I describe it, in a way that could be carried out beyond that, so that there are structures set in place, a system is set up, so that access to services becomes easier to do. And you might not be able to define that specifically, but somebody who would apply might.
Like, the idea is just it's basically that checkbox, which one does this fall within, and then the letter of intent is submitted, and then y'all review for the potential applicability for what it goes.
Okay.
So one thing I was going to ask was, and this is kind of from to my fellow council members, is the opportunity to be involved in a discussion with Upward Mobility in the city and the county about the idea about affordable housing. And out of their housing and inclusion group, they've been talking about kind of this need for coordination between the city and the county. And I know we're planning, Dakron, you can answer more, you know, kind of like the RFP on like, what can we do for workforce housing and our development, reviewing the UDC for community. I mean, we're doing some, though it's kind of gonna be a while before some of those things have actual actions for us to fund. And so I wanted to get before, I don't know, we don't know the logistics yet, but I've been in talks with the county commission about maybe temporarily funding a joint sort of position or something with also private, maybe within Boone County Children's Services Fund or else on the idea of like a kind of housing project manager to help kind of identify those policies and programs we can do to help develop workforce housing, what are some of our limitations that we might then use some of ARPA funds for incentives if that's an applicable idea. Before I started going down that way, I was like, does that sound, am I going, I don't know the logistics yet for it, but before I explore more, and Nick, you can probably, because you're on that work group, explain more of the thought, but questions on that. Yeah, Pat.
So the first part of what you said about working with the county and their Upward Mobility grant is a really great opportunity for us council to sit and have a meeting with the county commission and their children's services staff. I have this continuing unease that has been going on for many years that when we want someone to respond to an RFP, when we have funding available, we say, if we give you this money, what would you spend it on? Rather than our identifying exactly what it is that we're trying to work on. And so that has been, while it's certainly been a productive way to get money out to community organizations, it has also kept us from funding certain needs so that they're always left out of that, if you want to call it a lane, out of that lane. So I think the idea that we could sit with the county first and see which way are they headed, where are they going to emphasize their money? They have more money than we do. They have $36 million and we have $25 million. And then find ways in which we don't duplicate each other, but we cover the vast territory that often gets left untouched. That would be my next step that I would find very productive and helpful.
The idea of housing kind of, because it seems to me it came out a lot of this and that idea of coordinating that an area of focus. And I know when we talk about with workforce, a lot of our employers, they're having trouble having enough employees who can afford to live in our area. So I know that's an address. So I think, yeah, calling kind of a question of us getting together to talk about coordination on more than just this topic is what I'm hearing you ask.
We're taking our data and sitting down and saying, you know, where are you headed with this data? What should we be doing? Because if we don't work in concert with each other, we defeat the very purpose of having ARPA funds.
Right. And one of the things that came out of this, do you want to talk about the assessment?
Yeah, I think that's part of part of what is being seen is that Upward Mobility, that process has done a great job of identifying where the needs are and the ones that can be addressed, and not all of them. But as we can see in this in our survey, in our focus group, housing and homelessness rise to the top for pretty much, well, for everyone. So that's true in Upward Mobility as well. In the work group that's involved, well, actually there are two work groups, but what's involved there is they've done a really good job of being able to identify next steps. What they need is capacity for moving those processes forward. So that's kind of where the idea is to provide more capacity for them to move it ahead.
Yeah.
And that would be in concert. It would be a joint thing. I mean, we already have this experience with PHHS. We know that we can work together in that way, and I think this is sort of the idea, is that we would do this that way as well.
Can I ask, or Stephanie or Jordan, on your kind of conclusion areas, is the idea then that, you know, we obviously right now we have a current priority with the Behavioral Crisis Center, which I think is kind of, according to the report, it's named. There's a print, we're working with Burl, like others. Is the idea that we're kind of like just continuing that you're suggesting maybe is kind of continue that checkbox as one of the ones that we're soliciting for people to apply for in this broad area? And it might be accessed, or do you want us to specify? You're both raising your fingers, so I'm going to say staff has a response.
So we already have some things in the works that we're working on with Burl. But the mental health needs are so substantial in the community that there may be other things you'd like to do, that could work on increasing the number of providers in the community or, you know, additional services. But I know that every single organization is struggling for providers. So, I mean, that's also a workforce issue, So,
I was going to say the same thing, so even though they have been identified before, if you let some of you want to continue to prioritize that, we'll keep it as an option on the resource access application.
We can
and you can, if there is an amount you want tied to it, like, you know, there's this amount for this priority area.
Okay. For most of them, if I'm looking at your kind of the top thing, did you guys read the same? I read it. It's kind of like mental health, affordable housing, workforce, almost like support, which is like development, but also supporting the workforce. I don't know how to bucket access to services because that's rather broad. So I don't know if there's, I don't know how to narrow that down more than, because that is so broad.
I don't know that I see it as so broad, really.
Okay.
As I said, it's a pre-existing condition.
Needs.
A lot of times the biggest barrier to people receiving services is first even knowing that they exist, and then knowing how they access them. And even though there is a lot of collaboration and cooperation within the community among social service agencies, for instance, and all of them are doing referrals to one another and giving information and referral is the term. There's still, I mean, we see it. It's still an issue. So there's been conversation among social service agencies about how to better coordinate that, and this might be an opportunity to address that. The city and county are already working on a common form for receiving services from city and county together?
For the city. Just the city.
So that, you know, there's just one single form that you use for any city service, and it's accessible to any city provider. So.
And we have an outside organization. The food bank is actually really interested in that common eligibility system as well.
So
and we've been talking, I mean, it wasn't also at some point in time like CMCA and others for anyone who can is filling out the form to show that they're eligible.
Everybody who's wants to do it. It's just difficult to get there.
Yeah.
And this is one of those transformational things that might be able to happen for our community, where we come up with a system where people find it easier to get to what they need.
I think when we talk about access and making it easier, we have to also understand that there wasn't enough funding for services to begin with. Right. And so if you're making access easier, you're also going to need to fund those services. Yeah.
And that's an ongoing.
So I guess the question, a clarifying one that I have on this, if we're working on some of these things, to Carlin, is it also the intent that the city might apply to use some of these funds for some of the things that are achieving?
There may be opportunities for us to look at projects that we are proposing to meet some of these goals, to put it in as an alternative request. There's some positions that you may want to look at and see if there's an opportunity to, you know, partially fund this by ARPA to see if it works, and then if it does, you can opt into a permanent position. But there are definitely some things that we would like to submit as projects for ourselves.
Give us an example. Can you give us some examples?
Sure. So we talk about community violence. And so one of the things that we may want to look at is actually hiring a coordinator to help us. As you're looking at different modules or different projects and different programs that you want to initiate, somebody needs to actually manage all that stuff to make sure it's getting done. And so that's a position we can fund. Right now, we partially funded a position to help with the refugee community. And that's we're funding that part-time, but this may be an opportunity to actually create a full-time position to actually go out and help and provide services to that group. And so there are just different things that we may want to look at that will work for us. Right now, as we also looked at the VFW property that we're about to purchase and that rehab and that project, and if we're going to actually have to have someone who's going to man and operate it, you know, that's something else that we can maybe be able to fund with this. So it's just, there's different things that we want to look at that it may make sense to use ARPA funds to support it.
Proof of concept.
Proof of concept, exactly.
Yeah,
Pat. Can I add to that if we had a person in-house whose job it was to collect data, so we would have some data to look at when we're making those decisions? I mean, I don't like to spend, there's so many unmet needs in the community. We have more than $25 million worth of unmet needs in our community. So I'm hesitant about drawing off some of that money to fund a staff position, but what we also are always looking for it, as a council member, as a council, is where's the data to help inform the decision that we're about to make? So I don't know what that looks like in there, except that I share the frustration that we're making decisions based on what we think is the right thing to do rather than what data we could pull to show us if it's the right thing to do.
Other questions for staff from council? So you're looking for us to give you that guidance, I guess, the first question is, whether or not to continue the current areas. Is that your kind of first question, is whether or not to continue those first?
The first area, that's in that first 12 and a half. And so as we're looking at the second area.
Well, but I'm asking, some of those things are in both.
Yes.
Or, they're coming out. So the question is whether or not to continue that checkbox forward.
Yes.
And those would be, like, mental health. We mentioned behavioral health, but you have it written in there. How is it written in there for people to apply? Is it written as behavioral or mental health?
It isn't written out.
We did the RFP.
Right, for the first 12 and a half, we've already did the RFP for mental health, and we've actually negotiated a contract with Memorial.
Okay.
So if we decide to move it forward for the second half, we would just kind of like
mental
health and then let providers provide.
Okay. And then remind me what's currently out right now on the Be Heard. Community violence
and
workforce development. And then the third one, homelessness, we did the RFP that we're doing on planning.
Right. And so we do need to open that up for resource sets. And so we need to take what we've got out of that RFP and put that into some kind of scope for people to present to.
Okay. Right. So the new ones that would come about are really mental health broader, affordable housing, and access to services, with the idea being they'll be able to flesh out whatever.
Maybe, if that's what we decide.
And that's what I'm just going based on, what I was reading.
And to change from workforce development.
Just workforce support. Or
just alter it in some way to sort of represent the retention piece.
Yeah.
Which is retention.
Okay. Did I read all the same things you all did? Is there any, MU?
Yeah, I think that's, and I mean, I think that a lot of those themes, like you're saying, is common to what we've heard before. So, so I don't know that when we said, hey, we're going to do this with the first 12 and a half million, I don't know that that was also a limitation on we're only going to do 12 and a half million on these areas.
Right. Right.
So I think that this helps, contextualize a little bit more of the feedback and responses that we've gotten. I'm not sure that there's anything here that's sort of earth-shattering in terms of changing the direction of, how I would think about responses and evaluate, what comes in. But I do. I also like this idea of looking for areas to collaborate with, you know, priorities that the county chooses.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's going to be more of a priority for them probably after Jan 1, when they know where they're headed. So, you know, that would probably be a time, because I think their application, they have a similar thing that's open now, right? Interpreting the applications, and then when they have a new presiding commissioner, I think that's
kind of requesting a joint work session with
probably
them in January too.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm not sure if it's a council commission work session or if it's a collaboration between
staff.
The various staff members and reporting out, you know, where some potential collaboration areas are.
I've had the opportunity to meet with the commissioners monthly, kind of on the conversations with this, and it sounds like something they're interested in. I know we have someone from Children's Services Fund who's here who's also had the discussions too. Pat, you have your hand up.
So I'm a little concerned about waiting till January. Again, we have a pretty sizable population that's struggling, and we have an opportunity. I realize that there's an election tomorrow, but whoever that takes that open seat on the county commission can hit the ground running. They both understand what we're in the midst of. So I think the sooner that we put the commissioners together, I've been on council for 2 years and a month or so, a couple of months. We've never had a joint meeting with the county commission. We've invited them to meetings, and then we were too busy to talk to them, and we moved on. So I think that feels like the next right thing to do so that we don't waste energy and or resources on something that won't be impactful.
Their survey is open right now, so they're still collecting their data.
Yeah.
But they also, we can talk about collaboration.
Yeah. And I'm happy to make the inroads to them. I mean, the presiding commissioner doesn't take office until November 1st. I get all excited about November because it's my birthday morning. January 1st. So just talking, I mean, in general, you're right. It probably wouldn't happen until after that anyway. But it doesn't mean we can't be having conversations and then planning for. Getting you all into a room together does become tricky. So as far as scheduling something before that might be a little tricky with them, but we can definitely.
Well, I just want it to be productive.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
I feel like if we have a joint meeting that says, all right, what do you all want to collaborate on? Like, that's not going to be the most productive use of time. So, you know,
this is where we're trying to focus
to it. So we have, you know, sort of lay some groundwork leading up to it.
Some
do you know when their survey ends?
I don't.
Okay. Okay. That'll be good to know. Yes, Stephanie.
So, in the comments and the feedback you've given us, any of these things that are in the key findings, mental health access, assistance to households came twice in our key findings and responding to the negative economic impacts. And so that kind of falls under that broad category of ARPA called responding to public health and economic impacts. And it's got a whole range of possibilities. Would you like us to open it up enough to, like, where you might get things about food insecurity and child care assistance? And I mean, things that we know are present problems in our community. Do you want to open it up then? Do you want to keep it tight?
I think I would be interested in opening it up. For one thing, because we have this $12.5 million that we sort of earmarked last year, and I don't know how much of that we've actually spent, but I don't think very much. And I think, as opposed to saying these are the very specific things that we want folks to do, I would like to have a broader idea of what people need help. And that's the same thing with the violence interruption stuff, where it's like, you know, we can be really specific, but there's a whole set of programs out there and people that are working on this in a number of different ways. And if we're too specific, then we keep them from even applying or trying to be creative about what the options are.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
For me, the concern about this, I've done some thinking back to where I was at the beginning of all this process, even before I came on council. And my concern is for those people who have struggled the most as a result of COVID, and they were already struggling. So they're struggling all the more. And I think that people who are working with that population, with those populations, are going to have insight that we don't have around this table. And so I would be anxious to hear from them in that way.
Yeah. I guess I'd like to though also flip that. We've talked about this earlier today. You know, people that are having issues that we can help them with now is great. I would also like to have some of this money go towards more transformational stuff. At the same time as we're discussing, you have to get to the transformational stuff. So if you're grounding right now, you need some help.
It's a fine line.
It is, but you know, we need a little bit of both.
Or maybe a lot of both.
Yeah. Does that give y'all direction on the next steps? And then one thing I will say is that I'm reading this too, is that, you know, we're kind of helping with this, but we also, all of us in this room, play a role in helping people know about these opportunities and to pitch, have them pitch their idea to resource, you know, through this process, if they have an idea that they think addresses mental health, you know, to put it in there. Because I get emails all the time from groups, individuals, others. And so I think that can be up to us to help carry that water to encourage those who apply. Well, thank you. And thank you all for doing all the work and
yes,
talking to
you.
So many people
thank
and doing this. It's really appreciated.
Thank you.
So now we're going to go on to just as an easy topic. And I forgot what's next. Oh, yes, solid waste.
Your legacy.
Oh, I know. Thanks, Andrea. I just put
right?
me in a...
Is that
yeah.
right?
Fancy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And while they're doing the transition, I brought some of my kids' Halloween candy. It's in the corner. Please eat it.
Do they know that?
They do know it. It's still good stuff. They didn't just sort out the bed.
How do I turn this?
Go to the right. Go, you probably can't see, but it's one more. There you go.
Sliders of some kind?
Yep. Two kinds.
And pasta salad.
Is it better with glasses or what?
Oh, gosh. Sorry. I'll try to. All right. Do we have a staff report?
Yes, Mayor and Council, I would say thank you for letting us take the time to give you this presentation tonight. I'm David Sorrell, Director of Utilities, and I've got Steve Hunt, the Assistant Director of Utilities for Solid Waste, Damon Crum, the Collection Superintendent, to help address questions you may have. So tonight, I would like to review the current curbside collections methods that we have, and I got some recommendations that we would like Council to consider. So currently, we service about 35,500 customers each week. We have 8 routes for garbage each day, 5 routes for recycling each day if we do it weekly, but currently due to low staffing, the recycling is only being collected every other week with 3 routes each day. This slide shows that we provide 104 bags. You can buy additional bags for $2 a piece. We have charges for bulky items and major appliance collections. So our current system is a manual collection system where we have people riding on the back of the truck for 8 refuse routes. They collect approximately 890 stops with each route. We run 1 bulky item route per day, Monday through Friday, with 20 stops per day. 1 major appliance route per day, Monday through Friday, and it also does 20 stops per day. And those all have to be scheduled. And then in addition to that, it's important to realize that each one of those 8 refuse routes that's doing manual collections also services about 10 2-yard dumpster type containers each day. Our current recycling collection operation is manual as well. Blue bags are used for containers. We don't have any limit on the bags. You put plastics in there, aluminum cans, metal cans, glass bottles, jars. And then fibers collected separately, and no limit on that. It's just typical junk mail, newspapers, magazines, cardboard. So the first recommendation we have for your consideration is regarding the recycling program. And with it, we would like to defer consideration of any changes to the methods of collection, pending the results of our study. Council has approved an engineering services agreement recently with RRT Design and Construction, and they're going to evaluate the city's recycling operations. And it will ultimately advise us on changes to improve the operation and help meet goals that are included in the Climate Action and Adaptation Plan. So with that in mind, I think that making changes to recycling now and then turning around when we get those recommendations in the near future and then maybe making more changes might not make sense.
Can you remind us the timeline on that?
Well, we are meeting, I think, with all the council members next week and week following to get initial feedback. So we're just now kicking off here in 8 months.
Okay.
The second recommendation is I think we ought to consider eliminating the logo bag program and that we should stop providing black bags for refuse collection. This is a subject of many complaints from our customers, defective bags not being available, that $2 per additional bag is too costly. It's a difficult program to manage, and I think it would be something worth considering that we just get away from providing garbage bags. If we did this, I would recommend we consider ending the requirement on January 2nd of next year and still require all refuse to be placed in bags and that the bags couldn't weigh more than 50 pounds. And we would go ahead and provide vouchers on a regular schedule until we use all the inventory bags. But if we're going to continue to provide the bags, it's time to make the order. And it's about $500,000 for the first run. And we need to do, you know, if we're going to do it, we need to do it very soon. And if we did quit providing them, that would reduce our expenses by about $1.2 million annually.
Dave, a question, sorry, on that one. A question that I received was, you know, currently we're doing it, you pay for the 104. So is there a discussion on this recommendation to count bags? And if, you know, like how would we eliminating pay as you throw as well?
We would be eliminating the additional cost for using more than 104 of those 32-gallon bags a year.
Okay. And I saw from your comments to maybe there was a consideration from staff where they were concerned, would that mean that we would then see an increase?
I've got the staff
response. Okay.
In here,
okay.
In just a little bit.
Okay.
If that's all right.
That's fine. That's fine.
Well, what's the? Are we contractually bound, you know, to this bag contract in any way, or what's the?
We have a contract with one vendor, but they're the only vendor that has ever replied or responded to our proposals to do the vouchers.
We're not committed to buying anything more than we already have, any more bags than we already
have.
No,
but if we are going to continue to provide the bags, we need to go ahead and make an order for the next batch of distributions.
Okay.
So my next recommendation is go ahead and consider to no longer providing blue bags for recycling. And there again, go ahead and distribute the vouchers until we deplete our inventory that we currently have, but require the use of a blue or transparent bag for the container recycling, and those bags are available at the grocery store because I've run out of blue bags before and actually went and bought some quick. They're basically about the same as what we provide. If we want to do that, that would reduce our expenses by approximately $400,000 a year. Yes.
If we went with the first part of this and wanted to keep the blue bags, does your cost estimate account for the changes that you would have to send out in the mail? Like, where does the $398 come from?
That's what our expenses are annually to purchase the bags
so
and,
it doesn't
and to
include
do the vouchers
the...
and all that.
Okay.
And the $1.15 million is the cost to purchase the garbage bags and do the voucher mailings
Okay.
It's a good time to ask this question.
Yeah, so the did you want to ask?
Well, I was surprised by this one, Dave. And the reason I don't hear complaints about this, so what's the rationale behind doing that?
I replied earlier to your question. The largest complaint we have about recycling related to the bags is more than anything is when we tag a bag and we don't collect it because it's got garbage or full of styrofoam or cardboard or where people put the wrong items in the bag. That's probably the largest complaint we receive. Periodically, we'll get a complaint about the bags having seams that split or what have you, but to be quite honest, I think we should just get out of providing bags in general.
Can I ask a clarifying? You label both this last one and this current one recommendation two. So are they have to come together, or can we get rid of trash bags but keep blue bags?
Yeah, you can. It's either one. It should have been recommendation 2A. 2 and 2.A or 2A or something. Right. Yeah.
2A, 2B.
I can't count very well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Are the blue bags?
It's not good for a utility director, but go on.
Are the blue bags from the same vendor as the black bags?
Yep.
We'd have to initially get local bags. We can just get blue bags. So it made it easier to go for another vendor to supply bags. The biggest cost that we have with the bags is that we have local bags. There's only one vendor that would actually print all those bags, and that's why we can.
And the vendor does the vouchers for us. Mm-hmm.
Is this consistent with the other recommendation to not make any changes until we look at recycling?
Right. It's not completely consistent with that recommendation.
Right.
And if we stopped providing recycling bags and we educated the public to go to the store and buy their own, we would still have the issue of people putting wrong stuff in bags.
Right.
And so it doesn't really solve for that problem.
No.
Okay.
No, you're always going to have an issue of improper items being placed in the recycling containers. And the third recommendation would be to consider converting to an automated residential curbside refuse program. It should improve working conditions by reducing the number of staff required to ride on the back of the trucks and manually loading material, which is the most hazardous portion of the operation. So what we have come up with is we'd have a program that would be automated collection with 9 CDL required routes each day, Monday through Friday. That would be approximately 710 stops per day. We would purchase 2 smaller units that wouldn't require a CDL license to operate them. They would have about 355 stops per day, and those smaller vehicles would be used in areas where it's difficult to get to, or where congestion with cars or something makes it where it'd be difficult to empty the carts and, needed. We would have 2 people staff that truck, and somebody may actually have to move the cart, just to make it all work. We'd still run 1 major appliance route per day with the 20 stops per day. There wouldn't be any change there. And we would have change to 2 bulky item routes, and the containers that the curbside collectors wouldn't be able to collect anymore would be collected by those 2 rear load vehicles. So each one of those 8 were collecting about 10 per day. So then we would have 2 routes that would collect 40 per day of the containers.
Dave, going back. Can I ask a quick clarifying question? So the last bullet point there is kind of like because like you notice the current service, right, where you have your normal trucks are also doing these bulky or the containers pieces. I'm guessing because of staffing, you can't do that right now, but you could in an automated collection, or why not make that change now?
I don't understand it. I'm sorry.
So you're saying that you will have routes specifically for those containers?
Yes.
And the bulky items. Right now, yeah. you do have someone going out for routes for bulky items that's separate from the regular routes, but you have the container happening with the regular routes, if I recall. So is this, like, is this change, that last bullet, just a better service we should be providing regardless?
Well, this changes because the automated vehicle with the arm can't be a two-yard container.
Okay.
So we still have to be able to service those.
Okay.
And there's more than can be added to the existing routes
in
their locations.
Thank you.
So that would involve providing carts. What we would recommend is provide a single size of a cart to all customers. Either a 65 or 95 gallon carts, and we've got an example of a 95 and a 65. And
yeah, why? I want my 32. What's going on?
32 up here. And then if you needed regularly to dispose of more garbage than what that one cart would handle, you could order a second cart and calculate it up based on what some landfill tonnage and what have you would come up with an $8 a month additional charge if you had a 65-gallon cart, or $12 a month if we did 95-gallon carts. I know there's probably a lot of desire to maybe offer two or three different sizes and let people pick and switch and what have you. I think one of the things that some of the vendors have told us is if you provide a bunch of the carts, a lot of people pick the 32-gallon one, and then all of a sudden they decide that's not enough, and you end up with a whole building full of 32-gallon carts. And I personally think if we were to move forward to explore this automated collection, that let's do something real simple now, and then we could always add options moving forward. Instead of making
you're
it very
simple
complex.
To 96, because that's not simple. Okay.
I like the 65. That's the equivalent to the two bag per week kind of thing we've got going now. And then one of the things we would need to look at if you ask us to move forward is some sort of provision for, you know, a one-time collection of excess amount that wouldn't fit in the cart. Not that you can just throw bags at the curb with your cart, because we wouldn't be set up for that, but you know, people are going to have a graduation party or something at their house, and they may have more trash than can fit in the cart. How can they get that picked up without having a second cart sitting around all year long? And that's something we can figure out.
Would that include also like yard waste in spring or fall or something?
Well, we could look into that as well.
That was a common question that came up in 2016 and 15. We're talking about this a lot. Is what about, since we are a bioreactor, people can put their yard clippings in. And so, you know, knowing at those seasonal times, what sort of options would they have? Like if they got those brown paper bags from the grocery store and could put them out, if that would be allowed.
Now, that's something that we could definitely look at if we were to be directed to move forward on making some changes with ordinances and what have you. But you know, that would be like leaves would be seasonal. You'd have it in the fall and spring.
Mm-hmm.
But there again, and unless we could find we'd just require running special routes probably for a short period of time. But staffing would dictate how feasible it would be.
Okay.
So we did, Mr. Hunt and Mr. Crom did present this to collection staff, and they did have some comments and concerns. First one was their concern about the ad pay that they currently receive from manual collections may go away. The city is currently in the process of performing a comprehensive classification and compensation study. When the study is complete, if it gets implemented, I would hope that the rates of pay will be based on market conditions and that ad pays would not be necessary for refuse collectors or some of the other unique situations that we have. But that was yet to be determined. They have concerns that the hiring process is slow and difficult. And, you know, there's always opportunity to improve on any process we have. But I believe that HR and our staff work well together. And the hiring process for individuals required to have a commercial driver's license just takes longer just due to all the requirements of the position. You get additional background checks, you got to have a medical physical, you got the drug tests and all kinds of stuff, and it just takes time to get all that stuff scheduled. So it's always going to be a longer process than other positions, but we could probably find ways to improve it some. They were concerned about if we didn't require the logo bags any longer, that customers may put out many more bags. I don't think people are going to generate any more refuse, whether we're requiring a logo bag or not. And if we still have bags that weigh less than 50 pounds, I don't think it's going to be creating additional disposal.
So, Dave, this is the one we're definitely getting emails about. And in part, it's because Solid Waste had said, hey, pay-as-you-throw is working. We've seen a decrease in the amount of refuse. I mean, is that because they just, where did that go? And you're not scared that it's going to come back? What helps?
The recycling bags.
Right, they put in the recycling bags.
We're still not going to let, everything still has to be in a bag. What we saw decrease in is all this, where the whole house is sitting at the curb.
So people putting out their sofa, and you would pick it up.
I mean, I see all kinds of people, and I myself have done it, where I had something I wanted to get rid of. I just took it out and set it in the front yard, put free on it. 30 minutes later, it's gone. So it's not going to the landfill when you get people that are reusing it.
Nick and then Pat.
Is that where the reduction is that we've seen?
Well,
in terms of what?
Reduction in total tonnage.
Right. I guess I'm trying to figure what's the source of that. Is it in the individual items, or is it in the bag content that we've seen that reduction?
Broken down that way. And then in some instances, I know a lot of people are getting containers where they've probably done some sort of cleanup at their house, and the dumpster, which normally would have just been put at the curb, but that wouldn't be counted as curbside.
So it could be that this is coincidental, but literally. But
I'd have to do some research to find out exactly. Mm-hmm.
Pat had a question.
I have a couple of questions. So my memory is that the whole movement towards pay-as-you-throw started after staff came to us and asked, I'm looking at our union representative over there, solid waste staff came to us and asked if we would put a 5-bag limit on what they had to pick up so they could stay on schedule. They could also minimize the number of times they'd have to go back to the landfill to empty the truck to come back. So, but now it's not a problem how many bags are going to be put out?
Well, because we still don't, we never enacted a limit, and so gave the bags, but people still put out more. Some people put out more than 2 bags. Some people put out 4, 5, 6 bags, depending on the house. So there was never something, we never limited the number of bags that people put out at the curb.
But at $2 a bag, it gave people all kinds of incentives,
right,
to find other places to leave their trash, which
exactly
they did.
And so but you also saw people trying to provide free bags to help you. And so while there's some people were paying for the $2 bags, there was, I saw where some social service agencies were providing bags for people to assist with people getting bags. So we never really, as much as we'd like to say we implemented a pay-as-you-throw system, it never really was a pay-as-you-throw system.
I have to think about that. Okay. My other question is, I remember when we asked if there could be a special pickup for initially when we phased it in, or when it was the first year when it was time to collect all the leaves and yard debris. I know it's all over my yard now, all the stuff that fell out of the trees. And I think I remember you saying, Mr. Sorrell, we should just compost it on site?
That's the best thing to do, is mulch it with your mower.
So, but it just feels like the advice has changed from the last time we talked about this. I know this is a contentious issue. I know that people are upset about it. And I'm not going to make any assumptions about any other council member, but I heard a lot of stories about hardship because of the $2 per bag fee. And my understanding in lots of cases where a family couldn't afford the current trash system, they were dumping, they were burning in their backyard, they were doing any number of other strategies. So I don't know what to do with my confusion here.
Andrew, you had a question?
I did. It was sort of related to Pat's initial statement. about how this discussion got brought up. So did we meaning City Hall and staff, talk to Local 955 about these recommendations, what they'd like to see? Because we're talking, the last slide had comp and class and salary on it. So the union was involved in that discussion?
Yes.
Okay.
Or staff members.
I think it was just talking directly to staff.
Okay.
Staff.
Yes.
So, but not their necessarily
representative.
Right. Well, in a matter subject to collective bargaining?
That's what I'm getting at.
No, we weren't negotiating. We were asking the staff, we're looking at going through this system. What are your thoughts? What are your concerns? So we can have those.
Right. On the last slide, we talk about ad pay and changes to those things. So while you weren't negotiating, totally get that, but that is part of things that could change that could be negotiated upon.
Right.
So I wanted to see if they had appropriate discussions there.
This is staff saying, here are our thoughts. This is nothing that's been negotiated out. And when we go out to actually look at ad pays and we look at the putting in those incomes for the pay and comp study, that all will be negotiated. And that's something that we've talked to the unions about, that as we get those numbers in, we will sit down and discuss what we actually implement. And so we're not there. But what we believe, and I think that's the preface of this, the belief is that once we look at our pay and classification study, we'll get to the point where we have our salaries high enough, we should start looking at eliminating all the ad pays. Because one thing we do have is the ad pays do. We have a lot of ad pays, and a lot of them really just, it's just one time, here's something we've had an issue with, let's toss some dollars at it, and it doesn't make sense.
It's not equitable across the workforce.
Correct.
Can I ask, just on this one, for the number of bags, when we talk about the potential of these sort of things, right, the idea of limiting the number of bags, or at least raising awareness,
mm-hmm.
If we eliminate, you know, if you're not buying your bags, the specific bags, and so you're putting out, you know, whatever all you'll want, and then we do switch to a system that does limit you for what you're doing, I'm worried about a gap in education for our community and our citizens and our customers. So I know, just because this is now, I'm an expert on what can fit in these things. So the small one can fit two bags. The medium one is actually like four bags, if we're talking about kitchen and some of the black trash bags. So I'm concerned, right, if we all of a sudden go to you can do whatever, and then we go with the 65 for what we're sending out, people are going to be a little bit surprised. They might not be ready for it. But at the same time, I understand from a collection standpoint, the logistics of a guy driving around a truck, is he going to count the bat? You know what I mean? Like, what are we doing for this?
And that's the hard part. So I look at where I live. I live in an area that has duplexes. And all our houses are connected, and we put our trash out together. And so you couldn't go to my neighbor and say, okay, this four bags is this house, or this four bags
right.
is this house, because it's a group of bags all out together on
mm-hmm.
the top of the curb. And so it would be difficult for us to do that.
Right.
But there are some neighborhoods where you can easily say, okay, this house has four bags, and we're going to leave it at four bags. But then it's what bags get taken, what bags get left. And, and so that's the concern with trying to just limit it to the number of bags.
Okay.
It becomes a difficult part for the workers to actually manage.
That's a good point, yeah. And I'm assuming we didn't really seriously consider stickers.
We didn't. I think we talked about it the first time before we got to the actual logo bags. I think the biggest concern with stickers is they can be counterfeited.
Yeah, we have stickers in other cities.
I know. I'm just saying what the reason why they decided to go from stickers to go to the logo bag. I mean, stickers are our thought, but then we still have to get through the process of mailing them out and sending them out to people and
or tags or yeah. You had your hand up.
Two questions. One is, your comp study, when is that going to be actually finished? Do we know? Because I thought it was sort of about now.
Well, no. We sent an email out.
I'm sure you did. I can't remember what.
So part of our issue is that a lot of the cities that we're kind of get their comparables from didn't respond, and we actually have to use FOIA or sunshine law in order to get them to respond.
Wow. Okay.
And so now that we have the response, but part of what they gave us, instead of responding to the survey, they sent us their salary sheets, they send us their pay orders, they send us all this other information that we have to kind of decipher to kind of put it into the survey format so we can now actually streamline that process.
Are you thinking January now?
We should be done. We should.
December?
Well, I won't say December, but by January we should be done because I want it done for February for the budget purposes.
Okay, so that's one question. And then I'm sorry I skipped out at the beginning of your presentation, Mr. Sorrell. Why would we get rid of these logo bags before we decide if we're going to automated collection? Because whether we put out two bags or four bags or whatever, I mean, that is a pay-per-throw system. And if you give the bags away, which I am fortunate to have way too many bags, so I do give them away when I have kids that are using my dumpsters instead. You know, I mean, it's still a pay-per-throw system. So why would you get rid of that before we have something to take its place?
A cost savings.
Well, I was going to say it's a cost savings.
$1.1
million annually. That's a very difficult program that people complain about constantly.
Customer satisfaction with the program.
Do we still have that many complaints about it?
And they're saying that they'll use up, you said we'll use up the,
we need to
use
the remaining inventory of bags, so we would just keep giving the vouchers out, and you go in the store and get the bags, and we use the remaining inventory of bags that we have that don't have logos on it to use all of them. If we do a conversion,
and they can just do
and if we don't, you know, because when we mail out those vouchers this December, we need to order bags for every voucher that goes out.
Okay.
And then we would just have that many more bags if we did convert that we don't have anything
to
do.
It's just that we've worked so hard to get everybody educated on this system. It just seems,
I know.
I understand. Okay.
So my question would be then, if we do end up going to roll cards, how soon could that be implemented? So, because I'm thinking about the education piece as to when black bags end or not, to the point where we do roll cards. Not assuming that that's what we're going to do, because I do have a second concern about that. But if we did, what would the time frame be for that?
And how would we implement it? Because you can't, it would be hard to do the whole city at once.
I got some more detail on that. But the best answer to that question is it's going to determine delivery schedules for trucks and carts.
Okay. Well, the other question is associated with that. This has been an ongoing concern, and there's been a lot of dissatisfaction about what we're doing. So I know I did send a question and you responded with that, but I did want to talk about it in this forum that I'm interested that the public has ample opportunity to give feedback about what they would like to see. I also want to be sure that we've heard from staff in a way that we feel comfortable with their response and also with the union, because part of the decision to go to the number of bags and limitation of bags was as a result of their involvement. So I think that no matter where we go, no matter what we do, there's going to continue to be, at least for a period of time, some controversy about this. And I would just want us to be sure that we're having ample opportunity for people to give feedback previous to that implementation, wherever that goes. So that's something I really do want to see. And in fact, when I've had people write to me, I've written back and said, well, one of the things I'm going to be working toward is people have an opportunity to speak up. So look for that opportunity.
Roy, you have a question.
Yeah. What is some of the determining factors of what areas can get roll carts and what areas cannot get roll carts?
So under what we're proposing here is everybody gets roll carts. And the basic idea would be you get a roll cart, you put your garbage in your roll cart, you get it to the curb, and we'll figure out how to empty it. Regardless of how difficult it may be to access, even if it is matter, we'll have to take somebody who rolls it to the truck and tips it. But everybody would get a cart because we're not going to be staffed with two people riding on a truck. You know, if they got the side load truck, there's no hopper in the back to throw the garbage in. It just doesn't. Everybody would get a cart and figure out how to empty it.
Because one of the issues was for a number of our citizens is that they are mobility impaired, and to get it out to the curb is a problem.
We have the pick up in the house program, and we could
excellent.
Do that. That would not cease. So
as long as they can get their trash to a roll cart that's sitting next to their house where your guys have access to it, then your guys can roll it down to the
curb. Go pick it up and take it back to the house, yes. That program would just have to be modified a little bit, but that's what it amounts to. It's we pick it up at the door. We won't go in the house, but we'll pick it up outside the door.
Okay, I just want to make sure we are clear about that and that we let the citizens know that, because that's what I hear the most of, is this is going to be difficult for people that are handicapped, for people that have mobility issues, that for people that have
and that's
gravel driveways, that people that have really steep driveways.
And that's the service we do currently with the bags.
Okay.
I know, I'm just looking at our time, just making sure. So, we're doing good. You've got another 7, which I know we'll get into some of the timeline and next steps. So, Pat, question, and then want to go.
There was an earlier slide about evaluating or reevaluating recycling. So how are the recycling markets holding up? Is there still ample places for you to sell the recycling to?
No.
And is that across the board for all the materials that you collect?
And has there been any consideration of going to a single system?
They're evaluating the recycling right now.
That's right.
I was like, now I'll step out anymore, Betsy.
I'll try not to. Sorry about that.
And then obviously be monitoring. And I know part of the reason for this efficiency is because it is part of the bargaining. It's basically a bonus. If you get done early, you're done.
Well, I think it's partly because the efficiency is because it's unknown for our staff and us, but I mean, the industry's demonstrated that it's more efficient.
Yeah. And one thing as we get into, when you get into your timeline of events, I think one of the things that I know I've heard questions is like, how does this, do we adapt in practice as we learn, as the model goes? So just knowing that we'll have to evolve for some of these instances. But you can go on, sorry.
So if we get into what the cost of this would be, 95-gallon carts are approximately $65 a piece now. 65-gallon carts are $60. If we purchase 36,200 carts, and if we base it on the more expensive cart, that would be a cost of about $2.4 million. And the trucks, so what we would propose would be to lease 10 automated side-loading trucks. A 5-year lease is approximately $65,000 per truck, and that we would lease 3 of the smaller non-CDL required trucks, and that's about a $50,000 per truck annually. So our total annual lease expenses for the vehicles is about $800,000. Our FY22 budget included replacement of 4 collection vehicles as normal replacement at $1.3 million. We deferred that pending if there were decisions on whether changing collection methods would be implemented. And we carried that funding over into this year's budget. This year's budget also had $1.42 million for replacement of collection vehicles as normal fleet replacement. And if we didn't provide the refuse bags, we still provided blue bags, we would have $1.154 million available for savings from buying bags, which would have a total available funding for FY23 of $3.8 million. So cost of implementation is $3.2 million. And funding available is $3.8 million. So the cost is $674,000 less than what is included in the FY23 budget to buy all the carts and lease all the vehicles in year one. And then moving forward, our annual expense, we'd have truck leases and additional carts because we're going to grow at about 1%. So if you put that in there, it's going to go to about $823,000 a year annual expense, but we got a reduction of $1.1 million for not purchasing trash bags. So it should be overall cost savings.
Betsy, you have a question?
Well, I wonder what the time frame was, but I was hoping to get to it.
Oh. It depends on the leasing.
Right.
It really depends. That's the very last piece on here, I think. No, I took that off. The timing on it's going to depend on the delivery schedule of the vehicles, more likely than the cars. Now, some of these vehicles are taking a year, 2 years to get. Sometimes if you find one on a lot, you can get it in a matter of weeks, which we've done that recently too. Mr. Hunt, I believe, has had a conversation with a vendor recently who is in the process of acquiring, what did you say, 18 chassis? And so if we were to move forward and we put out bids real quick, and he was a successful bidder, he said he could have the trucks to us in late spring.
Yes.
So under a lease program where they would provide the fluid changes, filter changes, all that. So it's until we actually get some bids out,
okay,
get some responses, and we know delivery schedule, we can't commit to any schedule.
Okay.
Well, and I think with that, and then Pat, you have a question. I think with that is there's a strong need from council to also have a very robust community engagement and education before any change happens, regardless of trash, bags, no bags, carts, whatever it is. As we saw when we switched to pay-as-you-throw with the bags, there was so much confusion still, even though I felt like we had wallpaper to the town with notification. So I think we'd be interested in what that communication plan would be. Pat, you have a question.
I do. It's kind of a two-part question. So at $65,000 a year for renting a truck times 5 years, that's $325,000. What does a new trash truck cost?
Depending on the chassis, ma'am, it's anywhere from $360 to $400-ish.
And are you responsible or required to purchase and pay a balloon payment at the end of the 5 years? You just give them back?
We have the option, depending on how Lisa set it up, we would have the option at the end of 5 years to purchase the vehicle or the vendor would then take the vehicles back and they would sell the vehicle. So we would have the obligation.
Does your business plan for this include turning it back at 5 years so that you can have equipment in good repair to start the next 5 years?
That's what I would anticipate.
So if part of the lease agreement is for them to do routine maintenance, don't we have employees that do that work now? And what does that do to their continued employment?
That would... Under current conditions, that would greatly help them because they are having the same staffing shortages that the rest of us are, and keeping up with routine maintenance and repairs is getting to be very difficult.
So I remember,
and it would only be the routine maintenance, oil changes, filter changes, that kind of thing. Any repairs we would still be responsible for, and then our fleet staff would still have to do those repairs.
Okay, so the folks that do the dangerous work of out there when a truck's on the side of the road, they're still going to go out there and try and...
And that would only be for these vehicles. It wouldn't be for the remaining...
What is it, 40 other trucks?
Fleet would still be dealing with those.
The non-solid waste trucks that the city
No,
has?
The ones that weren't waste. In the automated program.
Did you say 40 or 4?
40.
40 that aren't in the automated program. And what are we
the
using?
The ones we presently have?
Yeah, we have 50.
That's 60 trucks total.
So you're going to put tippers on the back and turn them into automated collection?
No.
You're going to use them for other purposes?
They're still used for commercial.
They're still used for commercial, and so we would get rid of the most deteriorated pieces of the fleet that we have. Keep all the better pieces and move them into commercial.
And how does staff feel about the, when you talk to the staff, did you talk to the mechanics about this change and are they pleased with that?
I talked to the fleet manager and he thinks it'd be great if we would lease these vehicles with services.
We didn't ask the mechanics who actually do the work?
I have not talked to the mechanics, no.
And are they also covered by 955?
They are?
Yeah. Okay. So we're waiting for the inclusion of our 955 representatives?
We're not looking at eliminating any positions. So they just the maintenance of vehicles
In recent years, we've moved towards leasing more equipment at the landfill, and it comes with the routine maintenance, and it's worked out very well.
So So your next steps are, you mentioned pending council direction. Is it also a council action or no? This is just...
At this point, I believe it's you can tell us to proceed with A, B, C, none of them, all of them, you know, whatever. I don't think you need action formally in the chambers.
Well, wouldn't it be, I mean, if it came an official decision, right? We don't make votes in our pre-councils.
No.
But it would be the sort of thing that the official vote would come when we saw a contract coming to us.
Well, or we come back with ordinance revisions.
Okay. Okay.
So, you know, pending the direction that we get, we'll work with purchasing, legal, fleet, to bid board contracts for vehicles and cars. I was going to have Matt and Brandon develop communication plans to educate and make customers aware of any changes that would be approved by council, and continue communications with collection staff to receive feedback so we can improve the program moving forward to keep them informed of what's possible. And then also regarding the bags, we would draft ordinance revisions to eliminate the logo bag requirement. And for the requirement of the city providing trash bags. And, you know, if you want us to move forward, we'll have to draft ordinance revisions that, you know, has a lot of different things that would be, that need to be addressed with automated curbside collection. Where, you know, when can you put the cart out? What time does it have to be back in? Where does it have to be stored? You know, provisions for getting an additional cart and charges, special collections for those one-off events where you're going to have bunch of extra trash from one celebration at your house that is only going to happen once every 10 years or something, and those sorts of things.
Matt.
So is it your sort of vision then that the cart would stay with the house?
Yes.
But somebody damages their cart, needs to replace it, they would be responsible for buying a new one.
No, we would, the cart's warranted for what, 10 years? So they're warranted for 10 years, and we'd take care of getting the wheels put back on, or if the lid breaks or whatever, we'd take care of that.
And somebody moves out and they take the cart with them, then
the new person would call. We'd have to provide a new cart.
And then at the end of 10 years, would you have a replacement program? Or?
Yeah.
They would replace quicker than 10 years because lids will break, wheels come off, and so as they get damaged, you'll replace them.
We'll have, what we would probably need to do is just set up to start replacing a portion to where you weren't doing them all in 1 year. Mm-hmm. And you order them, and then the vendor will actually drop them off at the home.
Okay. And then you said you leased 10 of the larger trucks, 3 of the smaller ones that could navigate these.
Mm-hmm.
You know, areas that need more, where you might need to, unload the cart yourself somehow. Is that roughly like the ratio, the number of homes that you think might need that sort of service? Like, 30% of the houses? And I mean, have you looked at that?
Yeah, we looked at how many narrow streets we have, how many streets require special turnaround at the end, some of the areas with lots of parking, looked at the payment and the collection staff, basically came up with that ratio of vehicles we can
keep. And those do include one spare truck for each type.
Okay.
So that when you do have one that's broken down or the services are being performed or whatever, you still have the ability to run your full routes.
It's really like 2 and 9, so 22%. Okay, and then so all of our driver positions now are CDL positions?
Yes.
And you would be proposing creating some non-CDL drivers?
Positions.
How many of each?
Hold on.
Okay.
We have a few trucks that can...
One truck now. We have one 80-yard rear load truck we purchased last year's budget that does not require CDL. It's weight small enough, it does not require CDL.
But all the refuse collector and senior refuse collector positions currently require a CDL? So the packer position doesn't require CDL, or we could have temporary employees that don't require CDL that could operate that non-CDL required truck.
Correct. Okay, so just walk me through how this addresses like the staffing concern. I mean, you have enough CDL drivers now to operate the, under your proposal, to operate the CDL trucks, and then what's sort of the buffer of the other positions, the non-CDL positions? Are you able to fill those now? Is it the same number? Is it?
Well, those trucks are smaller, which allow us to be able to access areas that have, that are more challenging.
Right.
For automated collection. So we get a smaller truck, but the weight of the truck makes it not require a CDL. And it was just something to point out that it
I'm just thinking through the math. Is so you've had a staffing problem for as long as I've known about how trash is collected. Does this, does the math on the number of positions that you would need under this proposal, are you able to staff this?
Right now?
Well,
no. We could staff this, but we'd still end up needing the temporary agency folks to do the recycling collection right on the back of the truck.
Because recycling is not being automated, we're making any changes to
until
it.
Until we get the study done.
Okay.
As far as the residential refuse staff, those positions assigned to that unit, yes, we have sufficient staff. Anecdotally, to do this, we actually promote some of the refuse collectors to be senior refuse collectors, because now they would be driving a lot of that truck. So we would actually be promoting them and have some employees.
Yeah,
I had a couple questions. One is, so the cart stays with the house. Is there any expectation of having to increase the cost to the residents for a solid waste collection, or is that just sort of a wash because we were providing them with black bags, and now, as part of
If we move forward, we could take this information and we could do an addendum to the cost of service study and have them run that if you'd like. I actually have a feeling that our overall expenses will go down on an annual basis, so there would not be a need for an increase in rates.
Okay.
Now, that could all be offset with class and comp study and we change pay rates or something then, but due to this, I think we would not need a rating.
It would just be straight. The second one is that I know that you don't like the small roll carts, but the people I've talked to are like, we put out one bag every 2 weeks. I seem to have a lot of retired folks in my both neighborhood and my ward, as opposed to the folks with the 4 or 5 kids, which I probably have some of those too. Is there no way to get any of these smaller roll carts? Because those are much easier, I would think, if you're somewhat elderly.
That is, I'll be honest about it, that's my opinion.
Yeah.
And it's not my decision. That was my recommendation. if you would like us to offer multiple size carts, then that's something we can definitely look into. I think it would be much simpler to keep it real simple.
Right.
Initially, and then see how everything works. And then if we get a bunch of concerns, then we could maybe, we'll adapt this and we'll provide these smaller carts.
I think, though, with some of the older neighborhoods with less space for roll carts, if there's an option, they might want the smaller ones, depending on the size of the families.
Could we make it like a special application type of thing?
No,
and make it be the same price, but you just get the small cart?
I don't know. I'm just asking that as a thought.
That may be a simple way to do it without ending up with a building full of 30-gallon carts uses.
You can also say we don't have any available now, but we will in the future and phase it in over a year or two. The other complaint I hear a lot of is how ugly the carts are. any options on different colors or different
patterns?
Yeah,
get into it. Just saying. So, and then I see Pat. I just had one quick thing. When we're talking about this pending direction, the things to look at, I just want to, again, remind the idea around, we've brought up a lot of questions about yard waste. And to that point, if we're looking at changing the collect or the ordinance, and I see Steve Callis with our composting awareness, one of the things that we have, we allow for commercial food waste, others, vendors, right, to collect commercial food waste. And so I think that would be the time, too, to explore if there were people interested in residential food waste for curbside composting, just to explore that as an option if we were going to be changing that piece. I don't know what your all's thoughts, but I know it's something that we don't have the capacity to do curbside composting, but do others, and I think it's something that helps reduce when we're talking about moving to a cart system, eliminating
the smell. We don't have capacity with our current staffing levels to expand
right.
our programs
right.
because we're not even able to do what we're supposed to do.
Exactly.
To go to a allowing residential curbside collection of food waste, I mean, that's in Chapter 13, which has to do with waste hauling.
Right.
And
If you would
like us to do that, I mean, it would be very simple to expand that to include the ability to go to residential neighborhoods
right.
as well.
Yeah. And I mean, it might be the sort of thing that just, you know, I'm not even sure if those who are vendors who allow that would be interested, but I think it also helps us with some of these questions. It would obviously be, customers would be requesting it themselves, doing that, we would not be in the business of that, but it does open up a little bit of this. Then, Pat, question.
I have a couple questions. So the first is, I was not prepared for the unintended consequences of pay-as-you-throw, and it took up a substantial amount of time in my email and my voicemail. So are we doing any kind of, a practice run, a whatever debriefing where you put people together and say, but what about this, what about this, and what about this, before we change this on our community? There were a lot of people that struggled with pay-as-you-throw. So where is that built into the timeline, if at all?
I mean, you know, we were going to, if you directed us to move forward, we were going to put together an educational campaign, but I mean, I don't know of doing exactly that. I don't know that we've even gotten as far as to figure out what we were going to do with the educational campaign.
She's more of like the question.
Well, I'm sorry, I can't hear two people at once. I have any questions.
She's talking about this part. Like, what do we do about? What do we do about?
So,
what do we do about? Not, why are we?
We know that there were agencies that had to come forward and help people with trash bags. So could we not go back to them and say, if we implement X, Y, and Z, what does that do to the population that you continue to have to serve with our current system? So that's my first concern, because it did not go well when we rolled that out. And it's one thing to have the money to be able to pay for the bags, even if you're ticked off that you have to do it. There's another thing not to have the money to pay for the bags. So I would like to know that we're taking that preparatory step. And then the other piece of that is whether or not the finance department's already gotten involved in saying whether or not we will need to have a rate increase or not. I understand you said, Mr. Sorrell, you didn't think so. But as part of the rollout, I think we have enough concern in our community about how we're making this change to roll carts that we should get in front of that argument as well and put out some data showing that it either is or will not result in a rate increase or decrease as a result of moving to trash carts. Is that possible, Mr. Seawood?
Well, currently, if you go back to your numbers, the cost, I mean, the cost for moving into the system is actually cheaper than what we're spending right now.
Net reduction, annual expense moving forward of about $330,000 annually.
So we should show exactly how that impacts. Maybe our trash rates should go down. I mean, we should show exactly how that impacts what we're going to charge. I'm sort of kidding about that because I know that we need more revenue. But you know, imagine the people who are already aggrieved of our current system. And if it, you know, you're going to get those questions. So let's get ahead of it and show how by doing this, and then we translate it to the number of residential houses we pick up from, and then when we do all the math, it's going to turn out to be we can do it at the same price you're currently paying.
Well, I mean,
it's not that hard to show them that.
No, it's not. I mean, that's what we showed here. I mean, the thought is that...
I don't think so.
The thought is that our issue is that we did hear from the people who said they had concerns, and that's the reason why we're making the adjustment. Now, we could say, hey, let's stick with the bag program until we get to the part where we can actually roll out the roll carts, but we know people are frustrated with the bags. That's the number one complaint that we've gotten. And so that's the first thing we looked at is, hey, is there a way for us to eliminate the bags? And so we are trying to respond to the concerns that we're hearing from our residents. And that's, you know, that's what we're doing right now.
Yes. And you could do that and show them the math.
Yeah.
Of how it's not going to change their rates.
Yeah, so to Pat's point, I mean, I think when you're talking about it, it's more than education, it's also the engagement. And so I think having, you know, we're trying to pull out more of Be Heard, more any proposals going out there, having this information out there, because Pat's right. I mean, like showing the math, yes, you've shown, but like, no, there's a lot of bullet, you know, showing it easily for people to see and understand. And also having those opportunities, because I thought at first, Pat, you were talking about those unintended consequences, like questions they might have about it, like what did you do about yard waste? What are your thoughts about this? Having a piece so that people can ask those questions and also see the responses. In case I have the same question as somebody else, I would like to see.
So, Mayor, give me a second to explain what I mean by unintended consequences. So we had low-income folks that live in Columbia Housing Authority housing. That when we had the old system, even though they had to figure out how to get that trash bag from their apartment to the dumpster, the city was providing them with a bag. And when that bag went away under pay-as-you-throw because they had a dumpster system, there were some low-income people that had to scrounge around to figure out how to buy a trash bag or whatever bag they were going to use to get that trash. So that was an unintended consequence. So then we found out a lot of people care for medically fragile people, and medically fragile people use a lot of disposable stuff that you then have to throw out. It's individually packaged. It doesn't last for very long. And so there was an expansion of people who had more trash. There wasn't any way for them to stockpile it. If you have a family member who's incontinent, you can't hold that stuff in the house hoping to find a trash barrel to put it in. So we discovered that there were a percentage of the population that experienced that difficulty. So I would like to make sure that we're being proactive, that whatever we're doing in transition, we're not making those circumstances worse. We're actually finding a way to work with them on it so that this change is not as painful.
Yep, that's a good idea. Andrew, you had your hand up. What was yours?
It was similar to that. I would say, you know, the past 6 years have been a lot of community engagement and feedback about the consequences that we're hearing from people, too. Personally, my preference would be to do away with the pay-as-you-throw, the logoed bag systems, find a way to provide black bags for those who need them, because I remember a conversation you and I had many years ago about...
We've been talking trash for a while.
We have been talking trash for a while about, you know, what are the implications of somebody who doesn't have a line item in their budget to be able to pay for trash bags. That was my family at one point. I get it. I want to be able to provide those. So I think my preference would be get rid of the logo bag system, have access to bags for people that need them in an assistance program or whatever, and then, like, let's get moving on roll cards. It's been 6 years of data gathering, anecdotal or otherwise, but I'd like to see us move on something. Yeah.
Well, one thing would be, it sounds like we have extra bags. Are we, if we don't put out the vouchers again,
right.
We still have some that the city has. So surely, to Pat's point and to yours, we can see who needs bags and provide those bags for dumpsters or whatever.
Like the common eligibility form discussion,
exactly.
It's like
yeah.
Already qualifying.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. Well, I'm keeping an eye on our time because I want to make sure we have a little bit of gap between our 7 o'clock meeting. So last few, yeah, Matt, you went out saying that you
yeah.
Want to talk
so
about trash.
Well, no, I mean I agree with a lot of you know what
yeah.
You two guys were just saying, and you know for me in terms of you know one of the attractions of getting rid of the logoed bag system is, you know, you're not putting a bag inside a bag, right? I mean, it seems like we're spending like over $1 million a year just to put plastic into the landfill, and that doesn't seem consistent with really anybody's objectives. So, you know, so simply removing that requirement, I think, is a huge step forward. And then I think, you know, the transition to an automated system, I mean, it's going to take time, you know, for all the reasons that you said. So I think that is a great opportunity for you guys to, you know, get coordinated, you know, across multiple departments, you know, whether that's working with finance to, you know, go through budget and look at the rate impacts, you know, a lot of other departments, and, you know, be coordinated and proactive in terms of communicating and addressing those questions. But start thinking about that now.
Yes.
Don't wait till we're down the road and be like, oh, this is happening next week, and, you know, this is what's going on. But so you've got a window here now, right, where I think you've got some where I think you have an opportunity to do a lot of good work. And then I would, my opinion is to leave recycling alone. If we're thinking about making major changes, a year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is, just leave it alone for now, because you don't get complaints about it.
People except for not having it.
People seem to know how to do it. If you tell people to go out and buy their own blue bags, they'll be like, I don't know where to get a blue bag. You know, I mean, you got the city system to do that now, and it seems to work, and people understand it. So stick with that, and think about major changes down the line.
Yeah, Nick, you.
I just want to say thank you for bringing this to us.
Oh, yeah.
Because we've been looking for this, we've wanted this, so thank you for bringing this to us. And it is a difficult topic, so I appreciate that for you. I just want to reiterate again that I want to be sure we give opportunity for people to give their own input into this before we make any final decisions. There are some people who do like the black bags and as they are now, and we need to hear that perspective.
Yeah, and to Nick's point, too, obviously the involvement of the staff who are the experts riding around on the trucks doing it, you know, and having that engagement, I think, is important for us to hear as well. All right, any last minute before we...
So, do you guys have direction? Let me
clarify what I heard.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
a good idea.
Let him recap.
Pursue getting rid of the black logo bags. Keep the recycling bags currently, and then go ahead and pursue moving forward with automated collections. And then we need to have some engagement, education, and things that happen as this all moves forward.
I heard something different.
What did you hear different?
I thought we were going to, as Andrea suggested, we were going to hold the remaining black bags and distribute them through the channels for folks who can't afford any bag, rather than let them just run their course and run out on vouchers. Because there will be families that will not be able to afford their own bags. And our agencies that we work with already know who they are.
Can we do kind of simultaneously the same thing, like continue providing, get rid of the ones we have, but also start looking into what would be the cost for us working with these agencies to start doing an assistance program for bags? Not necessarily the logoed ones we have, but just any bags, trash bags. You know, like, so seeing what the need and the demand, with almost making that assistance program, regardless of how many we have left over of the logoed ones.
Until we get to carts?
Right, right.
And are we going to give them assistance in paying for their initial
cart? Right,
and
I think that's look into what would that be.
Okay, I'd like to see a budget for that.
Providing bags until we have carts? Is that what you just...
Well, no. What?
No, I was just checking to see how many of the old bags we have.
Yeah.
We have quite a bit in stock.
Okay.
And so we can provide bags. As
okay.
Okay.
And then, but I think it's also that discussion about, I think the question was.
Once we would move to carts, we wouldn't provide the bags.
People might not need trash bags, or we might see what the need is for that. Because the idea is you don't necessarily need to have a trash bag. And that's a conversation to
have. Out here. Trash
bag.
Okay.
And then if you decide to still provide bags, you provide a lot cheaper bags for going to the local.
Okay.
It's basically just a small kitchen bag.
Okay.
So is everybody okay with what he said?
Except for
the whole extra bags.
Looking at the bags.
As long as we take care of folks who can't afford them, yep.
You could remove the, oh, Roy had a good idea. Could you remove the logo from the blue bags and also save additional funds?
I don't think that would really save us any funds.
Okay. We talked about logoing and adding funds, so that was my...
The template and thing that's already been created and purchased and all that. But I don't think that adds really any expense.
Yep.
Hardly at all.
Got it.
All right. We got that for that. Thank you.
Yes, thank
all right.
you.
We're going to adjourn.